Good news, Los Angeles. The Real Estate and Wealth Expo is coming your direction. When? Saturday and Sunday, November 4th and 5th at the LA Convention Center. Two big days. Tony Robbins is going to conduct a 3-hour sales and peak performance training seminar. Special guests include celebrity entrepreneurs and businessmen, Magic Johnson, Sylvester Stallone, finance expert Susie Orman. Pitbull's going to give a genius talk and perform live. Man, we are loaded for bear here in Los Angeles. Plus, 23 celebrity millionaires in real estate will teach you wealth building secrets. Use coupon code Adam. Tickets that are usually $149, just $49. You save $100. The ticket is good for both days. Show will sell out. It always does. Give them a call, 1-800-554-7474, or go to realestatewealthexpo.com right now. Once again, 1-800-554-7474 or realestatewealthexpo.com.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We like what you do for us, right, Drewski?
Good times.
Good times, man.
We're all loaded up with calls there.
Alan's been on hold for a while. He's doing some swinging right with this lady friend. 48-year-old Alan from Pomona. Alan?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Big fan, long time, second time.
Yeah, man. What's going on?
Well, it's a bit of a mystery to me. And I know Dr. Drew's going to tell me that I need therapy, and I don't want to hear it. I just want a quick fix pill, but there's no quick fix pill in nature. I know. I've been with my girlfriend for about 11 years, and for the first few months, we had a perfectly healthy sexual relationship. And after we moved in, it just fizzled. And now, 11 years on, we just have sex like once every month and a half, 2 months.
Mm-hmm. What was the healthy number?
We'd have sex once or twice a day.
Huh.
And when we first met, you know, I was 38, and it just worked really well. Another thing that I gotta mention is about 4 to 5 years ago, we were talking about how before I met her, I have a very sexual, very healthy sexual appetite, possibly borderline sexual addiction, but you can't diagnose yourself, I know. But she knew that what we were doing sexually as a couple didn't satisfy me. So she proposed an open-ended relationship on my side because she was really happy. She loves to cuddle. She loves to cuddle, and I love to cuddle, but it's not enough. And so I met with somebody, and we've been having a sexual relationship, like, almost daily. And I don't have a problem getting an erection with her. With my girlfriend, as much as I freaking love her, I have a hard time doing it.
Well, one of the things that happens with people that have been through, particularly people through trauma, is they compartmentalize, and they, particularly if the trauma is in any way sexual, it becomes very difficult to be sexual with people that you actually have intimate feelings for. That sexuality is sort of a walled off part of yourself that you can only have with people that you don't really care about. And then when you actually do care about somebody, it's hard to feel sexual about that person.
So is that nature giving you the finger for being faithful?
Well, hold on a second.
I didn't say anything about that.
Drew, do you worry about people that do the...
Is that nature giving you the finger for being faithful? How did he get that out of what I said about sexual trauma? Wow.
I don't know, but I hear more and more?
Wow.
I hear like people like, you know, we're in love. We've been together for a decade. But I wanted more out of life.
Right.
And she knew that while she was very happy and content, that she didn't fill my loving cup.
Yeah.
So I went out to go have that loving cup filled.
Yeah.
And because I'm a very passionate person.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know, are we just turning this into something?
Yes. Yes. Just BSing ourselves. But what's interesting, there was a study done recently that showed that women do a lot of that now. Mm-mm. That same kind of thing, like, and are feeling like, yeah, you know, I work hard. I went to college. I got a graduate degree, professional degree, and you know, if I want to have an intimate whatever with whoever, it's you know, it's no big deal. Guys do that. It's no big deal. It's just you know. Apparently yeah. Making very less of it than no, guys. But, guys at least know they're being assholes. But women apparently feel very like, yeah, whatever.
This new trend is an interesting trend because it's a trend of people saying it reminds me, it's kind of the in the same family of I felt threatened by this politician and his proclamation. Like yeah. I don't know, as that means you're flawed and weak and there's yeah. something wrong with you. Not you with nobility and dignity announced yeah. to the heavens. You felt threatened yeah. because of this proclamation that this person made or this what have you, you know. And it feels very connected to, like, I also felt like I needed to seek other lovers because yeah. I have needs well, and my needs aren't being met.
Yeah, in a
and
weird
like,
way.
You're sort of saying there's something wrong with you, but you put it in a sentence that makes you sound right. noble.
That's
or
right.
Something.
You've constructed a cognitive sort of phenomenology around it that allows you to justify your behavior that's deeply disturbed. But because you've made sense of it in a narrative that fits a current whatever, you know, a current sort of something that's acceptable, now it's just, well, that's just what that is then. It's a little bit of the sort of what the Ramblin' songs were like in the 60s.
Yeah, that's who I am.
It's just hey, she was barefoot. She was 14. I was rambling through my van. It's just what I do.
Yeah, I dropped her off in the intersection. I snatched her up from with no shoes. And I told her next year when I got back, God willing, when she was now 15. I'm not sure when her birthday is, but she could be 15 and a half when I come back
yeah,
in a year.
Could be.
That I'd love her up again. And this time she should wear flip-flops.
Right. It was a narrative that somehow slipped by at that period of history.
But I'm wondering.
And that's what we're constructing now, is these narratives where people go, oh, okay. As opposed to going, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, what I'm saying is like when I sit next to people on an airplane and they go, hey, here's Muffin Top, my pooch. And I go, sweet. And they go, yeah, he's a service dog. And you go,
come on.
Yeah, you start thinking to yourself, I pray you tell me you were in the military or something. No, I have an anxiety disorder. It's like, well, hey, 50-year-old lady, why are you telling me you have an anxiety disorder? Like, is that something that was sort of kept close to the vest and not shared with the flying public? You know what I mean? We'd put a nice suit and nice pantsuit on and just get on the plane and have a couple of highballs and kind of play it close to the vest. Like, this thing where you're, oh, I have to smoke pot, you know, because otherwise I have anxiety, mm-hmm. you know, like, or whatever. Like, what's everybody, it's basically, what's all the sharing of the information, and then how is that helping you, and then why, look, society never really cares, so we don't care whether they have a relationship or not. We do care that you're living a life that's sort of dangerous. It sort of sadly reminds me of Ralphie May because Ralphie May, it's an interesting thing. You tell me what your take is.
Did you have the same sort of, was he as appealing to you as he was to me?
Sexually or?
Well, everybody.
Yes. No, I like Ralphie a lot.
Yeah.
Ralphie had a thing that I've examined in people that smoked a lot of pot for a long time, which is a sort of not recognizing, you know, he'd be talking to me about how strict he was for, you know, in his diet and his regimen and stuff like that. And he'd go, oh, by the way, you guys have a Coke? I'd go, like, we have water. Oh, no Cokes? We got a Diet Coke. No, regular Coke. And like, he'd be saying it like in the same breath.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I kind of thought to myself, like, he's not getting.
It can't be objective.
Yeah, there's something.
Yeah,
there was something I have. It's one of the effects that I've seen in folks that I know who smoke copious amounts of pot for long periods of time. It's just this sort of inability to recognize what they're saying when they're saying it or what it sounds
We got to drill into that a little bit, figure out what that is.
But I don't want to speak ill of the dead. I liked Ralphie
a lot,
and I thought he was super funny, and I just wish he could have. You know, I talked to Vinny Tortorich about it and said, look, he had my number, but he just, He never called, you know.
No, Ralph, the diet thing was not Ralphie's thing.
No, not his
thing. I worried about other behaviors and things that he couldn't.
All right. Well, anyway, Alan?
Yes, sir.
So what do you mean?
You're an intellectual guy, yeah. And you're taking your cock and putting it in your ear. You're going like think, but with your dick. Like you're intellectualizing yourself.
So he needs to take the cock out of his ear and put it in his mouth?
Yes.
So I'm BSing myself.
I don't know. It's not just your I don't want to say it's your BSing. I'm not going to speak to what's going on. I don't know globally what's going on with you, but here's what I know. You're smart. And you have a vocabulary, and you're able, and you've read a few books and listened to a couple lectures, and you're able to sort of intellectualize everything. And it's not really your friend.
It's a dangerous thing.
You think it's your friend, but it's not. It'd be nice if you just said, look, I'm a smart guy, but I don't know shit about this, and I'm throwing myself on the mercy of the court.
Or somebody who does know something about this. Well, but again, there must be some trauma back there for you to compartmentalize sexuality so much.
Go ahead, Alan. Anything?
Yes, I was actually abused as a kid.
Yeah, so there you go.
My friend.
Right, and that's what happens with that. It you can't be intimate with somebody that you feel sexual towards because that is associated with the trauma and bad feelings and yuckiness, and so the good feelings are over here with the non-sexual person, and the yucky feelings go over here with the sexual person. You need to integrate these things, and that takes a lot of work.
All right, so let's do the work, but let's
not. It's not cognitive. It's not convincing yourself that you're something. It's deep emotional work and trauma therapy with someone who knows how to do that.
All right. Let's talk to Joe, 30, from Los Angeles. Joe?
Hi, guys. First time, long time. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in a bit of predicament, like some advice. My wife has been dealing with depression and anxiety for years now. And she has a psychiatrist and a psychologist, and I've been in therapy for the past 2 years of helping, but it seems to be getting progressively worse. You know, she's barely able to eat or feed herself. She doesn't shower much. She'll throw on clothes if she has to.
Oh,
the only time she does.
Oh, boy.
How do I know when is the right time to admit her or to get more care for her?
If somebody cannot manage their daily hygiene and nutritional needs, I would consider that what we call gravely impaired. And gravely impaired is a reason for hospitalization. So self-harm, harm others, gravely impaired, those are clear reasons to go in a hospital.
And so, where would I even start in Los Angeles? Is there a place to take her?
Here's what drives me insane. She has a doctor. You call that doctor and you say, you are responsible for this woman. She is gravely impaired. Where are we taking her?
Okay.
That's it. That's it.
My heart goes out to you.
If you have a doctor, that person is top to bottom responsible day in and day out for you and your needs. You call that person, you say, we're in trouble, what do we do? If you're receiving a prescription on anything in the last year, you call that person and tell them we're in trouble, and it's that person's responsibility to get you out of trouble. Okay?
Okay. All right. We can do that.
You got it.
All right, Jeff. Good luck.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
My heart goes out to the husbands and or the wives of the severely depressed with anxiety and all.
Man, that's hard.
Good boy.
Oof.
Oh, boy, man. How's your wife do it? Well, the anxiety and the depression.
The OCD. And then the
physical manifestations of the constant coughing and the scratching and the picking.
Clicking on pens and
clicking
things.
On pens, a rattling of coffee mugs and microphones. Woo, man. Father killed her mother in a murder-suicide a few months ago. Oh, boy. Nicole from San Diego. You're jumping to the top of the hit parade here. Nicole, 35, San Diego.
I thought that might happen.
Yeah, what's going on?
Hi, Dr. Drew.
Hey.
So back in June, my father was 58 and my mother 59, married for 38 years, appeared to be pretty happy couple. But my father had a back surgery like 20 years ago, and he'd been on hydrocodone and soma and a few things. So he'd been battling that for years, and it had gotten progressively worse. And he went to rehab like 2 years ago, didn't stick with it. And then he'd kind of been telling us for the last year that he, you know, he was doing really well. He was going to NA meetings, and but we didn't realize that he, you know, he was still taking them. And I guess it was such a shock to everyone. A lot of the family and relatives were saying to me, "Well, it had to be the pills. That had to have just you know, ruined his brain." And I guess my question is, how much of, you know, he was functioning, highly functioning. How much of this, of what happened, can I blame on the drug use?
When did this happen?
This happened at the end of June.
Okay. What happened?
It was a Monday in the middle of the day. We found out because we couldn't get a hold of them for a few days. And they live a couple hours away from us, my sister and I. So we had the police go and do a welfare check, and they found them. He had shot her and then himself both in the heart.
Yeah. Wow.
So, it's not fun to be married to an opiate addict. And oftentimes the spouse of an opiate addict will seek solace elsewhere. So there might have been something going on that triggered him. I would argue that even if that were the kind of thing happening, were it not for the pills, this would never have happened. Now, I don't know whether it's the pills. Was he on only opiates or was he on other things?
Well, he'd kind of gone like cold turkey off of them and was on non-narcotics.
Like
but
what?
He wasn't meaning,
what was he on?
I don't even know what it's called. There were like three different things.
Well, that would be interesting. That would be interesting to know because what I was going to say was this kind of thing is more associated with opiate withdrawal, which can last for weeks. And I don't know what he was taking before he stopped.
My mother was administering them, and there was actually, I found like a locked, like a little safe that where all the pills were, and she was giving him like. She was doing it by what was on the bottle, like one every.
But I'm saying that he might have been coming off Suboxone, which can be awful and takes weeks, or Methadone, which takes months, and you know, so who knows what kind of state he was in.
But the withdrawal itself,
you add in the wrong medicines, you can really make it go bad.
Drew, are you asking? I mean, the question is kind of: can the pills make somebody who's not a killer into a killer?
The pills don't do that. But the withdrawal, depending on what you're withdrawing from, add in other pharmacology, well, now you got a pretty bad soup on your hands. You're making somebody who might have some very aggressive tendencies. Was he a policeman or something?
No, and he was not. He was never violent growing up. But I will say that, you know, in hindsight, there were a lot of obsessive behaviors towards my mother.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Paranoid?
Nicole? Stopping with her. We'd take her out for the day. Yeah. He would call every 5 minutes.
Yeah, paranoid.
Well, that's a weird... You. I mean, married 38 years?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
You'd take her out shopping after they've been married for 35 years and he'd call every 5 minutes?
Yeah, so something's up with him already. And again, opiate, otherwise, who knows what. I mean, it's a complicated soup you got in your hands here. Very complicated. But trust me, the pharmacology and the pharmacological withdrawal figured in prominently. Mm-hmm. Figured in prominently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Nicole, okay. Look, it's not worth trying to figure out really what it looks.
Right.
First off, you know, it's not a yes. It's not. It's probably not a toggle switch. It's a dimmer switch. Yeah. There were some tendencies and some paranoia mixed with some withdrawal and some drugs and some. And then maybe a piece of information. Who knows?
Right.
Something got dropped in his life when he was cleaning his gun. What's that?
Spread out. There were financial documents spread out. There was a clear problem. Their bank account was nearly empty. So, I mean, there were a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of stuff.
It's pretty
obvious, sorry, Nicole.
You know, that part of it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's remarkable you're doing as well as you are.
Yeah. But here's the thing. The sifting out and figuring out, it's really not, you know, look, if you work for the FAA and a plane crashes, you got to sift through the rubble to figure out what happened so that we don't crash another plane. you don't have another plane to crash. You got to bury the bodies
however,
and get on with your
life. I would argue,
it's
a really interesting point you just triggered in my own mind, is that physicians don't do enough of assessment of what they did wrong.
The physicians they have other planes.
They do a little bit, but not say the way the FAA does. And there ought to be a FAA-type commission on misappropriation of substances. But anyway, who am I to say?
Thanks, Nicole.
Right. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, moving on to another happy subject. We got Jack, 21, from New York. Jack?
Hey guys, huge fan and listening to the Corolla Network podcast since about 8th grade. Even like the classic Love Line episodes that Giovanni would post from 94, 95.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah, you're 21. It's a weird new generation now listening to the podcast since the 8th grade.
Yeah, that's the stuff we did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird
classic
sentence.
Love Line was recorded before I was born. So
Oh my God.
Well, no, the thing that's weird to me is...
He's younger than my sons.
The thing that's weird to me is he was listening to the podcast in the 8th grade.
Yeah.
That's a weird one.
The fact that their podcast has been around long enough or that the
so used to people going, I used to listen to Love Line back when I was in whatever. But now there's a podcast generation too. Well, thanks, Jack. Go ahead.
Yeah, so calling about my brother. So he just graduated high school in May. He had a really rough senior year. He was very suicidal. He was in the suicide ward of the hospital, kind of hopeless, directionless, was smoking a lot of pot.
Oh
and all the meantime, I've been away at college. You know, I don't really know how to help. Do I text him a lot? And my parents are freaking out. And at the same time, I'm trying to figure out what to do with my life.
Yeah, I know it's hard. The one thing I think you could help with is to get him to be more realistic about the pot, because in a suicidal patient, that can make things a lot worse. So he's not going to listen to doctors. He's not going to listen to his parents, but he might listen to you and just go, look, yes, pot is whatever. Good in some situations, bad in others. It seems to be having a bad effect on you. Let's stop that. You really could help that situation with that if he's able to stop that, because that makes somebody who's real fragile like that can go very bad, and they don't realize it. They don't realize the impact it's having.
Where do you suspect this is coming from?
I don't know, Adam, you've always talked about, you know, like 1920 is really tough for guys.
It is.
You know, they're hopeless.
It is.
Yeah. Oh my God. I
think it's part of that.
Clearing out my mother's house and I found some stuff when I was 19.
Hold
I wrote.
On. Write it down.
Oh my God.
Put it in the sock.
No.
Put it in your mouth.
Next
Hold
week.
Hold on a second.
Next week.
No. All right. Next tomorrow.
All right.
All right. But Jack, no, it is tough, but it's not tough when, I mean, it can be tough, but usually when you got a good older brother like you and the family's intact and the neighborhood's fine, it's not as tough. And so it seems like everything on your end is pretty good. So make
right, me- but yeah, the only thing is, you know, I'm kind of busy at college and I'm dealing with my own stuff, but and then I don't know how much.
How are your parents doing?
Is there an alcoholic in the family like dad?
No, everyone's totally fine. My dad's stably employed. My mom's stay-at-home mom. But I guess part of it was when I went away to college. It was just my brother and my parents, and there was just kind of that hole without me. I'm not sure.
On him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some families have like a savior and then a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect, you know, the prodigal son, and and you're sort of the good one, and he gets to be the bad one then, and then that whole thing needs to be disrupted, that role playing.
Okay.
And that pressure on him.
Yeah.
Well, does he have a situation with over a girl or anything like that?
Yeah, a little bit, but I just kind of thought that was, you know, regular high school stuff.
Yeah, it can be, but they wrote a lot of songs about how guys are pretty impulsive and can do a lot with a girl.
Over a girl.
Over a girl. Yeah. Or a potted plant.
That's
and,
guys.
So I might talk to him about the girl and about the pot.
Not the potted plant.
Not the plant.
No.
Yeah, the drug.
Yeah, and try to get him to talk about that and to, you know, he needs a relatable source. It feels like he needs support from a young male. It seems perfect to get him to sort of look objectively at himself.
I want to tease Paul, 53, from Atlanta, wants to share how to get off of pain pills.
Yeah, I want to see her that.
Drew, prepared to be blown away.
Happily so.
And educated.
Yeah.
I'll tell you guys, speaking of education, True Car, man, you guys need to be coached up. You want a new car, you go with True Car. Make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. People configure cars online only to find out they're not available. True Car, real pricing on actual inventory. Not pricing offered by True Car, but pricing from an actual True Car certified dealer. Over 3 million cars sold by over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. So if you're going new, you're going used, our own Chris Max Pattis sort of met in the middle. He got used, but 200 miles on a Prius. That's practically new. Essentially, it is new. True Car users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, you visit True Car, you see what other people are paying, and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. It's True Car, man. Some features not available in all states. All right, Drew, you want to find out about Paul and how to get off these pills once for all? Paul, 53, Atlanta.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good, how you doing?
Good, I love you guys. Drew, love you. Adam, I love you. I've listened to you guys for years.
Thank you.
I felt obligated to call because I think there are a lot of people who are in my situation. I was on about 100 milligrams of Oxy a day,
sheesh,
give or take.
How much is that?
And
a lot.
What's a regular pill? If
ten or five,
yeah. It's like the dentist after you get your wisdom tooth pulled, gives you the 5 or 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's it's about nine years doing that. Tried to wean off, tried to quit. I've even tried the Suboxone, which I think is a purgatory that should be illegal.
Thank you, Paul.
How'd you get your 10 pills a day?
Used to have a doctor that lives near you that I will not give the name of because I used to travel out to L.A. a lot.
Well, why not give the name? He's been shut down?
I love you, but I will not do that.
He's been shut down, whoever this is.
He had to stop giving out pain pills.
Good.
He had to bend it because I was one of his victims.
All right.
So basically, what happened was I tried everything. I knew I was going overseas, which I do a lot, where I could get codeine. The most important thing, I want to tell you a metaphor after I give you the story, because it's very important for the story. I weaned down to about 50 milligrams a day, five pills, went overseas, knew I could get these 30-milligram codeine pills.
Right.
And I can get a lot of them. If you go to a nice hotel, you can get a doctor to come in, and he'll give you 100 of them.
Where overseas?
England, France, wherever. I go a lot of different places. You go to a nice hotel, you can get a doctor to come in, and they won't give you the Oxy, but they'll give you the codeine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the straight codeine, the 30 milligrams, not the T3s.
Crazy.
So what happened is I knew I was going to run out in 3 days. I ran out. I got the codeine, started taking that. I was taking about 8 of these pills a day for the next 3 weeks. And I weaned off of that codeine. And when you wean off the codeine, you're free and clear. You're done. Now, here's the metaphor that helps explain
this. So you went from Oxy to codeine.
Yep.
And then it was easier to weed off the codeine.
Completely, totally easier. Now, let me tell you why.
Hold on. Drew, what's your experience with that?
I've never seen that work, so I want to hear what he's thinking.
But if in general, I said there are two guys in your waiting room. One guy has an Oxy problem. The other guy has a codeine problem.
Both equally difficult.
No, you don't go, give me it's Friday. Give me the codeine. That'll be easier.
No. Not in my experience.
Not in your experience.
No. I'm still want to hear more. I want to hear more.
I'm asking.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. It's extremely easier. And trust me, I've 9 years I've been doing
it. No, that. I'm wondering if there's something about the opioid receptor that when it's binding OxyContin and then you saturate it with codeine, if it somehow changes the configuration of the receptor. It's kind of an interesting biological possibility. But go ahead. Finish up.
Possibly. Yeah. So what happens is when you do wean off of it, there is absolutely no withdrawal. And here's the thing. The opiates, the Oxy, is like pine tar, okay? When you get pine tar in your hands, it's a bitch to get off. It takes days sometimes. You find it under your fingernails. You can't get rid of it. It's sticky.
hold on. This is my argument for why players don't need to put it all over the front of their goddamn batting helmets. It's all over your hands. Yeah. It's all over the bat. And then don't give me the, oh, no, they use it to grip.
Yeah,
I know. They just walk to the plate. Where's the pine? The pine tar can't go anywhere. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, so pine tar. And mm-hmm. now what I would describe codeine as, these 30-milligram pills, is like these little chunks of baby powder. They cover the need, but then they just blow away. They don't stick. They don't remain with you. So
yeah, that doesn't fit the biology really at all. But I understand that's your experience. That's what it felt like. Okay.
I've done it twice, so I know the experience.
Well,
I'm
okay.
Telling you,
I've done it twice.
You have to do it with two different people, not you.
But
right?
Hold on. But I understand it felt that way. But that's not what's happening in your brain. But here's the thing, is that I can get anybody off opiates. It's easy. I know exactly how to do that. I can do it comfortably. Keeping them off is next to impossible. So how are you staying off?
I just had to. It was too expensive.
You said you had the detox twice.
Once I weaned off and it was torture. I got off, then I went back. Then I went off with the codeine, then I went back. And this time, the prices are just too much. And I just said, I can't do this. I got a family.
And are you drinking more or smoking pot or anything?
I drink the same.
How much?
When I come home, I'll drink.
How much?
Four drinks at night.
And pot?
I don't smoke pot.
Any benzodiazepines, Valium, those kinds of drugs?
No.
And how long have you been off the opiates now?
Since April.
Okay. So he may represent what we're seeing a lot more of these days, which is non-addicted, opiate-dependent people who still have their lives completely upended by these drugs.
Well,
and when they're on it, they're still in the grips, and you can't tell if it's an addict or just a dependent person.
Anytime, and you don't hear much of this, but anytime you go, why'd you stay off? Oh, the price. That doesn't smack of addict
right,
to me. That is not an addict speaking.
Right. It's also...
You're right. I mean, but I'm telling you, there are a lot of people who are on these 100 milligram a day things. I don't know.
You're very eloquent, Paul.
Listen,
and
you represent a big population. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I don't want to minimize what this is. People are dying with what you had. You're very lucky. Thank you. I'm glad you called.
Why is he lucky?
Because he didn't die.
How could he have died?
Here's what could have happened. That asshole that was giving him the OxyContin could have also, when he went in and went, I can't sleep anymore, which inevitably happens. Well, here's some Valium, and here's some Klonopin, and here's some Ambien. Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Dead.
Yeah.
And so that's the good news here. Hey, Paul, I'm doing a documentary on all this stuff. Would you be willing to be interviewed for this?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. That's fine. That's fine. I just curious because I really want to get this kind of story on camera because it is so common and I appreciate
you.
But Drew, yeah.
I really do need to tell you I've been through the withdrawals. I didn't go through maybe 10% of the withdrawals.
Oh no! I hear no. I'm not diminishing what your experience was. I'm telling you, in my hands, I could have made it even easier and quicker. I know how to do that. You were doing it on your own, which is really the hard way. And you found a way out. Good on you. I don't want to diminish your experience one bit.
All right. Let's bring it home.
But cross-tolerant substances is how we get people off substances all the time. And codeine is cross-tolerant to the OxyContin. You found a good one. We'll use phenobarbital to get people off Valium or Klonopin, stuff like that. So.
All right. Go to amcarolla.com. Find out shows coming up, Bakersfield, Oxnard coming up, and merch and everything else. Give it to iTunes. Give us a nice rate and review. Maybe Ozzy will read one of your reviews on air. Chassis, Chassy. We got movies over there. You're going to want to see the 24-hour war and winning and all that stuff. Drew?
See all the good stuff at drdrew.com. The pods, the YouTube channel, the Facebook page. Check it all out.
So until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
I'm Allie Hilfiger.
And I'm Steve Hash.
And we're the hosts of Sit-In on Podcast One.
Join us as we travel around the world visiting creative people in their homes, studios, and the places they work to discuss their story, process, and basically everything in between.
We're sitting down with the biggest names in the world of fashion, art, and music like Tommy Hilfiger, Gigi Hadid, Bryan Adams, Martin Lawrence Ballard, and Zanna Roberts.
Check out new episodes of Sit-In every week exclusively on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or PodcastOne.com.